This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
And it is. And joining us to discuss the body in the snow, the trial of Karen Reed, the voice of reason on that documentary, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. I was watching it the night, I didn't even know you were on it. And all of a sudden, like, hey, it's Jen. And my God, that was an interesting 5 hours of content that the Unsolved Mysteries people put out. Overall, a very, I thought, balanced documentary on the whole case. But my God, talk about a masterclass in what not to do when you're on trial for murder and what not to say into cameras. Now that you've seen the whole thing, Jen, in its entirety, gosh, what was your take on this?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when you film these, you really only know your part.
Yeah.
And even though you might know other people are going to be on it, you have no idea how it's going to flow. And I have to say, having done so many of these, this production staff, the producers, the director, I just thought they were so professional and really wanted to portray a balanced type of documentary. And they did their darndest. And then Karen Reed decided to deep six it with being herself. it was so interesting. They gave her so much time. About 75%, I would say, of the show is either Yannetti, Alan Jackson, or her, and Liza Little, able to say their side of things. And it just came off. You just could not stand her. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
And I've heard many people have that same reflection.
I don't think this did her any favors by any stretch of the imagination. And it's funny because all week I've been talking about this, and we're talking about the case, but we're not even talking about the case anymore. We're not even talking about did she hit him, did she not. It's her character that we really got to see a deep dive on, and that character does not present well. It comes across extremely narcissistic. It comes across very much cold, little to no empathy. And I get, to a certain extent, you know, she can't win. Everybody's going to criticize this or that. But, and after years of going through this, you probably do get a little tone deaf to everything, but the level of it's like this, of just utter not having humanistic responses to your boyfriend who's dead, and their family and their friends, and just utter lack of empathy. Gosh, it was almost spooky.
Yeah, there were certainly a couple of points that really stuck out for me when she talked about the fact, which we all knew, that there was an order where she couldn't be around the family, which, you know, the family had asked for.
Sure.
But to not go to his gravesite ever, to never, I mean, this was a 2-year-long relationship. Yes, we know it was on the rocks. Yes, we know it was about to be over. Yes, we know she was seeking out at least one other man, that we got to see those juicy text messages. But gosh, to just have no seeming, you know, love or missing him. The only thing she cried about was herself.
Yeah. I found it interesting, her verbiage in some of these things, especially there was a scene where she's watching John at his car get in, and like, that's the last time he gets in the car. And I just thought, oh, what a poor guy. The lack of empathy, like who speaks like this, of, well, poor guy, that's the guy you supposedly love and you're in this relationship with, and didn't seem to have the emotion that one would have for someone that you care about.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say this, there, even though obviously across the line, a lot of people that murder or otherwise even accidentally murder, which I still think in this case, I think she threw it in reverse on purpose. I think she backed into him on purpose. I really don't think she thought she could kill him. Yeah. I think she thought he was kind of this big, invincible guy. And quote, she says it, I looked and he didn't look like he was mortally wounded. So, you know, I really don't think she meant him to die per se. But of course, the reason she's charged with second degree murder is anyone with any education knows if you put an SUV in reverse and go 24 miles an hour and gun it and hit somebody, it's reasonable to know that they could die.
Yeah. What was your take on, she contradicts herself so many times in this documentary, sometimes even in the same sentence, talking about having no knowledge, about not having very good memory when she's drunk, to being utterly sure of herself that she did not hit John O'Keefe, to earlier saying, well, could I? Did I? I mean, in current time, she seems like she's still kind of working these things through her brain and trying to determine what actually happened. The fact that she's still all over the road with this, I don't believe, how does she so confidently have this attitude of, I watched him get into the house, and that's new. And just prior to that, she didn't even realize she was at the house. You had, you know, someone telling her, Jen McCabe saying, you didn't leave him at the waterfall, because that's what she originally thought. You were in front of my house. And suddenly she has memory of this in great detail. That I found to be very contradicting.
Well, I think there's two things that could be going on here. One is wet brain. You know, people who drink and drink and drink to those types of levels, when you think seven drinks in a couple hours is normal for a 100-pound, 110-pound woman, that doesn't have an effect on your brain when you do it on a daily basis. I mean, I thought it was so funny in the docuseries where she said, God, I'm so exhausted, I just need to start drinking, or was it that effect? I just had to giggle when she said that. Time for a drink.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do wonder if she suffers from wet brain, where you literally can't exactly remember. Mm-hmm. And so that is one way to explain about five different stories and versions that she's told to varying degrees of confidence, as you said. And then the other thing is, and she points this out, she says, listen, it's all about saving me. She made it very clear there was nothing off limits that she would do. Like, morality's out the door. We're going to do anything we can to save me.
And that's what I found extremely stunning in this case. Not just the stories all over the board, but the level of what we have now discovered in the Karen Reed case that appears to be collusion with the blogger, with Turtle Boy, during the first trial, and who knows how long this continues to go. I'm going to play a clip from it here. This is her initially, and I had to go back and rewind this. I was doing laundry, and I heard her say this, and I'm like, did I just hear what I thought I heard? And I go back, and sure enough, this is her.
My lawyers told me we could share anything with Turtle Boy as long as it was public, and not for me to do it directly, to go through a third party. And then I started to get nervous about who I was using for a third party. So I eventually just started sending things directly. And then we started talking about the case probably once a day, almost every day, 5-6 days a week.
Talking about the case with him almost 5-6 days a week, hours on end. That's not just given a tip anymore. That's a relationship that's going on. And I'm not saying anything sexual or anything, but that's a relationship. When you're communicating with somebody who's out there actively intimidating witnesses and has been charged for it. What's your reaction to that? I mean, it almost appears, did she just admit to a crime?
Oh, she is definitely skirting it. And just the very fact that her attorneys said, go through an intermediary, when you have to do that, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
I love it when I hear these things that she's saying, because it shows consciousness of guilt by this whole team. They know it is wrong to leak information that is not public. I mean, look, we saw these horrific pictures of John literally on his deathbed, mm-hmm. That people were sending out with no consideration to the family. They even tried to show them in court, not just to the jurors, which they have the right to see them, but to court publicly. I don't know if you remember this, and Judge Cannone shut them down. She said, stop that. Stop showing those. Let's give some deference to the family. And they had these flying all over social media. So they were leaking anything and everything. And it was interesting because everybody thought, not everybody, but people who seem to admire the blogger, they think that he was just somehow clairvoyant. You know, it's such a joke. Everyone knew that Karen Reed's team was feeding him information, and now she's finally fessed up to it.
I mean, the fact that he has all these charges against him now, and we've learned directly that she was aware, and this next clip we're going to see more of just how aware she was, and feeling justified in what she's doing. I mean, where could this go? I mean, could this end up being another case unto itself, another trial? Like, I'm wondering if Turtle Boy is going to literally sink Karen Reed, the person that he so, you know, vigilantly thinks he's defending. I think he might ruin it for her, especially if she's found innocent here or it's another mistrial. I feel like all these misdeeds after the fact could be very, very dark for her.
Well, you know, Tony, when he was charged, actually, they charged her as well, or tried to, but she was not indicted. Mm-hmm. So in Massachusetts, it's a very interesting process. And because she wasn't indicted in terms of the harassment and the witness intimidation alongside a Turtle Boy, she wasn't charged in terms of indictment. So this is why, though.
Might that change?
Before, it was before they had all this information.
Yeah.
And now they have her admissions. They have more information from the telephone extractions. And we're still waiting on all of her information, even though, you know, it's believed she erased her phones prior to giving them to law enforcement. Nevertheless, Tony, I think you've hit the nail on the head that could be awaiting her too, is culpability with the witness intimidation and harassment.
Yeah. And this is, if one's not familiar, this is the person that she was getting behind and having those, I don't want to say cheer on, but I would guess probably, considering you're having 5 to 6, you know, conversations a week in depth, hours on end, with the guy who's doing this.
All of you, resign!
Shame on you!
You are a disgrace!
It's like a subculture cesspool when it comes to Johnny's case. If you don't believe that Karen's innocent, you become a target. And that's what makes it all so terrifying.
We are chopping these people down one by one and shaming them.
There have been supporters of Karen Reed who'd call them cop killers online, who call their places of work and call them cop killers.
That's a cop killer right there.
They have been stalking the witnesses.
Hey, John, how you doing? Fancy seeing you here.
Following them to lacrosse games to do nothing other than intimidate a mother, a family, kids. There are no boundaries.
Had their lives turned upside down. And if you look at the reality of the story, they were trying to do the right thing in the moment, and this is the thanks they get.
It's just unbelievable. All the people in the house, one by one, picked apart by this mob.
Killers!
Johnny would have been disgusted by the whole thing. This is more than dishonest. This is vile.
It's unimaginable what my entire family is going through. I am a witness. That's all I am. I am not on trial. I am a witness. And these people are terrorizing me.
Constant phone calls, emails, awful messages, people emailing my school. Just like a lot of harassment. Can I have a moment, please?
Sure.
it's impossible for me to have any sympathy for any of these witnesses. Definitionally, is it harassing witnesses? Yes, they're witnesses against me in my prosecution. And is he yelling things at them? And is he going up to their front doors and ringing the bell? Yes. But they shouldn't be witnesses. They should have been suspects. So it's not cut and dry.
She talks about it like she's like a 12-year-old kid. Like, well, you know, and obviously you were in that clip too. But my God, this is what is going on or has been going on out there. And then she flat out admits to having, you know, the knowledge of it. Yes, he's doing this. And is it that? That right there seemed very damning to Karen Reed.
I totally agree. And did you see the smile?
Yes.
The joy on her face, the enjoyment.
Oh.
And then look, next time you go through this, Tony, look at her eye movement right before she says they are subjects. They should be subjects. Totally indicative of lying.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't believe what's coming out of her own mouth. Self-serving statement and joy that they have suffered like this. I've always said, Tony, this is one of these cases. And the reason I've stayed so involved in it is to watch the persecution of all these witnesses and to have their lives destroyed. As a victim advocate, this case just screams out to anyone who is concerned about advocacy for people being hurt in this manner.
And it's so so extreme to where this has all gone and to be viscerally seemingly behind it or being okay with it, because she in the doc also goes and says, you know, I didn't do anything wrong, especially when we're talking about like seeing the family of John O'Keefe, you know, being booed as they go into the courtroom. Just this vitriolic, I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah, you did. You did. Even if you didn't hit him, you are doing a lot of things very wrong here. You do have the ability to say, hey, don't be doing this in my name. Do not be out there harassing these people, ruining these people's life, going after these kids who have nothing to do with any of this. Yeah, Karen, you do have a voice. You've clearly learned you have a voice. And it can be used for good and it can be used for evil. And it seems she's taken the darker path and seemingly proud of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And really throughout this whole thing, one of the statements she made in regard to the family that was troubling in that docuseries was when she talks about how she doesn't mind being close to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. It's fine. None of it. But I mean, you see Peggy O'Keefe when they're talking about everything that John went through physically and his death and people get on and talk about the last time he was seen in terms of trial. And you can see her back there, barely able to control herself in terms of crying, right? Yeah. She's a strong woman, but this is emotionally breaking for her. And meanwhile, you pan just a couple of feet and yeah, she's got a big smile on her face or laughing or, you know, cutting up. I've seen her actually cut up during these quite emotional scenes in the trial. And I think she honestly might do it just to further put the knife in Paul O'Keefe and in the O'Keefe family.
It's stunning. I mean, obviously I'm not a doctor or anything like that, but I mean, this is narcissistic behavior to the nth degree. It's spooky how she doesn't seem to have any sort of empathy. I found this piece interesting as well. Let's take a look. This is her watching the video of John and his last moments getting out of that vehicle in his driveway.
So this was John when he left to go out to see if McCarthy's, he's with his friend Mike. And John's gonna move his car to a corner of the driveway so I can park in the garage in his stall because it's about to snow. And that's the last time he ever got out of his car. He never drove a car. Puts his baseball hat on. That was found on February 3rd.
I don't feel much anymore. I feel sad for him, but it's all a precursor to this nightmare I'm living in. And when I used to watch it, like, I just felt, poor guy. I mean, everything he's doing is for the last time. Now it's become all about me, and I feel like I've mourned him and I'm fighting for him, but the fights have shifted to me now. I gotta save myself.
And her attorney's sitting across from her as she's saying all this into a camera. Just like, oh, doing whatever we're doing. Like, tell her to shut up. This is not good. And when she says, you know, at first, when she was talking about when she first saw this, you know, at the beginning before all of this has taken on the circus atmosphere it has, I was expecting to hear, I would cry. I would be mourning. It was so difficult. It's just, no, poor guy. Like, who says that? Even people, like, if you could see somebody being murdered and you don't know the person, you're like, oh my God, that person, their family, the tragedy, that poor guy. I'm just blown away.
It's cold. And, you know, one of the other points that I think really rang throughout as a theme was this was never any discussion about justice.
No.
It was always about me. It's never about justice and finding facts and what happened to John and things like that. No, as she said so perfectly right there to sum up the documentary, this is about me. And unfortunately, that's the way this case has been. Everybody is talking about her. No one is talking about John.
It's going to be interesting when this is done and the attention fades and the crowds go away and she doesn't have that party of people to feed off of anymore. I don't know what she's going to do. I don't know what she's going to do. But a very bizarre look into the inner workings of the Karen Reed trial, part one. Part two is coming up, and of course we'll have it here. Do you think we're going to hit the start date?
You know, Tony, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we have looming the federal appeal. The federal courts have already said this isn't double jeopardy, mm-hmm. what happened with the verdict. And we're, you know, it's done. Everything was done correctly.
Yeah.
But of course, they lodged an appeal and we're waiting on that. But I think the appellate court may get this decided in time. And I don't know. I think if they didn't, I think Judge Cannone is going to move on. She's not bound by an appeal at mm-hmm. the federal level not to continue.
No.
And she's been bothered if, you know, throughout the first trial, this whole federal case and everything that was going on in the investigation has always really bothered her because it has overshadowed justice for John O'Keefe.
Mm-hmm. Do you think anything in this doc is going to make its way into court in terms of any sort of evidence or statements that is not going to paint her in the best light in front of this new jury?
Well, they're going to fight for it. And, you know, in the first trial, ABC had already filmed her and making such incriminating statements mm-hmm. about what happened. I mean, it was pointed out in the documentary, and I thought it was done so well by the defense attorney that was featured listen, if she really thought he went in there, that would be the first thing you would do. You would be saying, listen, it's all about the people in there. But no, early on, she talked about, could I have hit him? I hit him, you know, could I have clipped him? All that she's not saying initially what matched up to this, you know, farcical idea of the conspiracy. And that's a big problem because they're incongruent. So, you know, Tony, I think it could start on time.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to, well, they've said they're going to keep with this idea that three people and a dog murdered John O'Keefe in the basement where the weight room was.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
At a birthday
Craving
party.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.